Donald Trump on the campaign trail speaking to evangelicals, saying that unlike his opponent Hillary Clinton, he won't be hostile toward the Christian faith. USA Radio News, I'm Jason Word.
Love sports articles but don't have time to search the web looking for the most compelling stories? Then US Sports Pages is for you. Why spend hours going to multiple sites looking to find sports articles when we can do the work for you? Our producers go through every newspaper in the country and pick out the best sports articles separated by sport, dramatically reducing your prep time. We also include sports and entertainment kicker stories. USSportsPages.com is the only site you'll need to get your sports fix. Check us out today, the daily links at USSportsPages.com.
QL1, you've been talking a lot about Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans lately. What would you say is the best reason to use it?
It's easy to use. You can get approved in minutes. It's convenient.
Hey, QL1, I asked for the best reason.
Oh, hold on. I wasn't finished. You can share your pay stubs and bank statements at the touch of a button, so you get real numbers, not estimates, and...
3, 2, 1.
Rocket Mortgage at QuickenLoans.com. Push button. Get mortgage.
Rocket.
Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org number 3030.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good morning, Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
Good afternoon. Today the weather is sunny with a high near 80 degrees. It's going to be light and variable winds becoming southeast around 5 miles an hour this afternoon. Tonight is going to be clear with a low around 53, light south winds. Tuesday is going to be sunny with a high near 83, calm winds becoming south 5 to 7 miles an hour in the afternoon. And Tuesday night will be partly cloudy with a low around 60, south winds 5 to 7 miles an hour. Wednesday will be mostly sunny with a high near 88. Wednesday night's a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms before 11 o'clock, and then there may be showers after from 11 to 2. It'll be partly cloudy with a low around 57, and the chance of precipitation is 20%. Thursday, it'll be back up near 74, sunny and clear. Good afternoon, and welcome to the Hunterdon Medical Center, Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce. I'm fine. Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce show. Mental health matters. This is NAMI's hour. NAMI is a National Alliance on Mental Illness. And there is a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we're all volunteers. We work out of our houses. We have no paid staff, no office. But what we try to do is we try to help people who have a mental health issue, whether it's the person themselves or family members who have someone in their family or next door neighbor or a good friend, somebody they work with. And we do it in various ways. We have a support group once a month on a Thursday, the third Thursday of the month. And it is from 7 to 8:30, and you don't have to register or anything. And we also do it by classes. We have a family-to-family class, which is going to be starting on September 22nd at 7 o'clock, and it runs till 9:30, and it is 12 consecutive Thursdays. It is totally free. Everything we do is free. If we hand out materials, that's all free. There's no charge. The only thing you'd have to do is you'd have to register for the class. And you can do that by going online to NAMINJ.org. Look for Hunterdon County, and they'll give you a phone number to call to register. We are very privileged today to have with us, I'm in a room with three beautiful women, So I'm lucky, you know. They're laughing. I'm serious, and they're laughing. But we are very privileged today to have with us members from Easter Seals. And we have Martha Wolf, who's a team leader, but she also has all these different acronyms behind her name that I have no clue what they are. LMFT. What is that, Martha?
Licensed Marriage and Family Therapist.
Okay. What is CCTP?
That means I'm a certified clinical trauma professional.
Wow. I thought it meant toilet paper of some sort, but, you know, I'm sorry. I couldn't resist that. And what is AAMFT?
That's I belong to the American Association of Marriage and Family Therapists.
Oh, okay. And you're also a team leader?
Yes.
Okay. And then we have Jill Gamble, who is coordinator for IFSS and ICMS. That's great. Now, what is ICMS? What does it stand for?
ICMS stands for Integrated Case Management Services.
Okay. And IFSS?
Intensive Family Support Services.
Services, right? Mm-hmm. I knew one of them. I just figured I'd get you to tell the other one. And we also have with us Lorraine Burton, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And Lorraine is a peer specialist. Am I right in
yes.
that? Okay. And she's going to tell us later about her experience with mental health and how she got to this point in her life where she became a consumer from consumer to peer specialist, which I think is pretty awesome. And as far as I'm concerned, that takes a lot of guts. And I mean that sincerely.
Thank you.
Martha, can you please give us a short, quote-unquote, of a story of the history of Easter Seals?
Sure. So Easter Seals has been around since January 8th, 1948. Easter Seals of New Jersey has worked to meet the growing needs of people with disabilities and the families who love them. Our mission is to help individuals and families live, learn, work, and play in their communities with equality, dignity, and independence. Our services and support are provided through a network of more than 550 sites in the U.S.
Wow. Is there one in every state in the union offhand, or do you know? Or I'm just curious. I don't know. It doesn't, you know.
Yeah, I know that Easter Seals is in most of the states, but we service different populations. It's not
all. Right. It's not all the same depending on what state you go to.
Correct.
And you're from California originally?
Yes, I am.
Whereabouts in California?
Southern California. I grew up in L.A. County. And
okay.
Most of my adult life, it was in Orange County.
Okay.
By Disneyland.
Yeah. My daughter went to, what is it? Where's Disneyland at?
Anaheim?
Anaheim.
Yeah.
And she was, in fact, when we went the first time to visit her, the street, right across the street was Disneyland.
Oh,
and
yeah.
This side was the apartment she was in. And then she moved to Laguna Niguel.
Oh, that's beautiful there.
Yeah, it was very nice. I'm sorry. I mean, it's gorgeous. The beaches. Beautiful. You can't ask for nicer beaches. There's no trees. You know, I mean, I love not having grass because I hate cutting the grass.
Yeah.
But there's no trees.
You didn't get to see palm trees?
That's not a tree. Come on.
That's what I miss.
Yeah.
I miss the palm trees.
I miss the big oaks, you know, like when you go up Northern California.
Oh, that's
beautiful. Oh, it's gorgeous. You know, really. And if you have never been there, you should go. Because it really is gorgeous, you know. And the Southern is nice. Don't get me wrong. It's very pretty. The beaches are gorgeous. The houses are very nice. But, you know.
It's like two different states almost.
It is. Yeah. It really is. I mean, my daughter loved it in Laguna Niguel, you know, because they got the pier and the water and everything right there, you know. But, oh, well. You know, she had to come home. You know? And that's another story we won't go into. Okay. You told us what ICMS stands for, and of course I don't remember. Integrated what?
Case Management Services.
There you go. Okay. Mm-hmm. I had the first part right.
Yeah.
What do you do in ICMS?
ICMS, we serve a population of 18 and older that have a primary psychiatric disability. What we do is we really link the consumers to their needs in the community. So we're a linkage and referral service that looks to assist the consumers with living a healthy and happy life in the community. So we link people to psychiatric needs, medical needs, social recreational activities, try and get them linked with transportation in the county so that they're able to be independent.
Okay, so basically the goal is to get that person to become as independent as possible.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the linkages and the referrals, sometimes that could be a problem, can it not?
Sometimes it can be a problem, but that's what we're there for. What we do is we assist with advocating for the consumer. So if they run into a situation where they're having a problem, maybe getting linked to outpatient services or something like that, we're there to advocate to make sure that that person gets what they need.
All right. Just a quick question. If I know that for a fact that if someone comes out of a hospital, they want them to see a psychiatrist within a week to 7 days. I know in Hunterdon County, it sometimes takes 3 months. If someone's coming out of the hospital and has been regimented for a period of time and then is released and not seeing anyone for 2, 3, 6, 8, 10 weeks, 12 weeks, 3 months, they could fall off the wagon again. Not that off the wagon is pretty lousy choice of words, but mm-hmm. you know, but they could have a collapse or a reoccurrence of their illness. And I don't understand. Well, I understand why, because I was talking to the head of behavioral health, Dr. Costco, mm-hmm. and she said that in Hunterdon County, there should be 39 psychiatrists for the county and a population of, you know, is like six. So they're like so overworked, it's brutal. But is that some of the challenges you have in Hunterdon County?
Those are some of the challenges that we have. For the ICMS program and also for some of our other community living services programs that we have in Hunterdon County, our individuals also work closely with the hospital social workers when mm-hmm. someone is hospitalized. In ICMS, we have a hospital liaison position. So what we do is before the person is discharged, we try and help work all of that out before they're discharged out into the community. And I will say I do find a lot of times the individuals coming directly out of the state psychiatric hospitals, typically the outpatient programs, the partial day hospital programs, will look to link those people first before a community referral because the need is greater.
Right. Well.
When they can. When they can.
It is and it isn't. You know, sometimes when you look at it, you know, and you say, all right, they feel that the need is greater because someone's coming out of a hospital. But sometimes when a person's out of the hospital, the need mm-hmm. is just as bad or just as great, rather, as it is if a person's discharged, you know. I mean, that's just my layman's mm-hmm. opinion. I mean, you know, it's nothing, you know, to go by, but it just, I don't know, it just seems, I understand New Jersey has a lot better services than a lot of the other areas. And I look at some of the services that we have and how long it takes to get to them, and I say, this is better than a lot of other places, you know. Mm-hmm. And they say it is, so I'm believing it, but
Well, and that's what our case managers are there for, too. Our case managers are able to go out in the community and meet with those individuals. So if they do have a wait to get the psychiatric care that they need, mm-hmm. our case managers are able to go out. They're able to meet with them. They're able to evaluate, you know, their status at that time. And if our case managers see that someone might be struggling, you know, we take the actions needed to make sure they get the help that they need.
Okay. If someone just say has a mental health issue, hasn't been in the hospital, what would be the requirements to become a part of your services, either one?
Yeah. You know? As long as they have like the Access 1 diagnosis, which is the mental health diagnosis, mm-hmm. as long as they've been diagnosed by their primary care doctor or a therapist, if they have seen a therapist, anybody that's has the credentials to diagnose, that's all that's required. Oh. And then the 18 years of age.
Okay. And then what's the procedure from then on? I mean, are they screened first or?
No, it's as long as, I mean, screen in the sense of necessity, if they have an, if they have things that we can work with them. So our program is designed on, it's a goal service oriented. So they need to have something to work toward. They need to be willing to work towards a goal, whether mm-hmm. it's, you know, to, even if it's health and wellness, if they just want to feel better physically, spiritually, emotionally,
right.
Anything right. like that. So as long as they meet that criteria of the Access One and being 18 years of age, then if when we meet with the consumer, we usually talk about, so what is your plan? Like, what is it that you're looking for? Sometimes it's very straightforward, as in, like, I need a doctor, I need, you know, I need to see a dentist.
Mm-hmm.
Just normal everyday things that maybe because of something they haven't been able to do, physical things like that. And other times it's more broad, you know, like, I want to work, I want to get a job, I want to open up my social circle, I want to learn a new trade, or I want to do those things.
Right.
So
right.
it can vary depending on the consumer.
Do you find that, and that could be Jill or anybody, do you find that, you say 18 years of old age or older, mm-hmm. do you find that some of the people that are 18 or older come to you and don't have the support of their family?
At times. I feel that a lot of the times when the consumer doesn't have the support of the family, it's usually because there's a misunderstanding of what is going on. They don't have a full understanding of how to help their family member. So I think that can be a barrier, and it can become frustrating. So they don't know how to provide the support.
You know, I've been teaching the family-to-family class for, I want to say, almost 11 years, something like that. And a lot of times you'll find the husband over here, the father, mm-hmm. and the mother over here. And there's a football field between their thoughts. And a lot of times the father is like, pull yourself up, go out and get a job, you know, quit laying around the couch, you know, yada, yada. And the mother's like, I refer to a lot of the mothers like a mother bear, mm-hmm. holds the cub close and cuddles them and, you know, wants to do everything for them and so on and so forth. And I'm not saying that's wrong, but sometimes the cub has to leave the nest and
yes.
go on its own, you know, and make its own mistakes and stuff. When you run into situations like that, how do you address, you know, the father on one side and the mother on the other, you know? Because basically they're pulling each other apart, and they're not giving the support they need to their mm-hmm. child or loved one, whoever it may be.
That we come across probably a lot more than maybe people might think. And one of the things we try to do is we try to refer the family to like an IFSS type program so that mm-hmm. they could learn and understand and that type of thing. And the beauty of having to be 18 to be this program is that you can make your own choices.
Right.
So when we do find those really big barriers of the parents, we sometimes will meet with the consumer alone to kind of see where that consumer's thoughts are, because a lot of the times the consumer is trying to please one of the parents. So we might not be getting like a very good idea of what that they want.
Mm-hmm.
And other times it's just an ongoing kind of barrier. And sometimes we can break through it by maybe the family gets to a point where they've had something happens and it kind of all the dominoes kind
right.
of, you know,
right.
fall apart, or they have some, like, something good happens. And so it encourages and gives motivation to the family for change. One of the things is like, yeah. just even being in my profession in general as a marriage and family therapist, one of the challenges that I've seen is just the motivation and willingness to change. If you're kind of stuck in a certain situation, even though it's not ideal, it's still comfortable and that's all you know. So changing requires a lot of effort and work. And if there's not that support or motivation to change, then a lot of the times you won't.
Right.
And we even tell our consumers sometimes, if you're not ready, you're not ready, and it's okay. There's nothing wrong with not being ready. You know, you don't have to change. It'll come to you when you need to.
I know, like, the first 6 years of my son's illness, my way of dealing with it was not dealing with it. I would go visit him in the hospital and, you know, the whole night. I would have done anything short of murder to get him out or help him. But when my wife would want to talk about something, I'd go in the other room and read a book, or I'd get in a car, go down to the truck stop and get coffee. I didn't want to talk about it. You know, we have four kids, and people would say, how's the family? Oh, Paul's doing this, Scott's doing that, Sherry's doing that. Everybody's fine. And I'd never mention my other son. One day my wife put her foot down and said, you're coming with me. I don't care, you know, blah, blah, blah. And she drugged me to IFSS. And a lady is long since retired now, but she, in her own way, taught me how to deal with my son's problem. It's not that I didn't accept that he had the problem. It's just that I didn't want to deal with it, you know. And this may sound morbid, but what I did was I had a funeral in my head. And I had a son, and I visualized him in my head in the casket. Now I have another son, and that son has mental illness. Since that point, I've done everything I can to, you know, support him and help him and whatever. So I strongly recommend IFSS. If they help me, you know, they can help anybody because I'm as thick-headed as they come. You know?
I think also with IFSS, they had also educated my family. My children were very young at the time. They were about maybe 9 and 14.
Mm-hmm.
And they really didn't understand what happened to mommy.
Right.
And my mom didn't understand what happened because I was 30 when it happened to me.
Right.
And back in 1998. And so it was very traumatic for her just being a single parent and not having my father in my life to support, you know, to help us out and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom had to make a lot of decisions. And even though she's in the healthcare practice, she had to make some tough decisions for me that she really didn't want to make on her own, but she did it because she had to.
Right.
And when I had joined Easter Seals, I was assigned, my family was assigned an IFSS caseworker, and they educated her, and they kind of helped ease a lot of the pain and the frustration that she was going through, and she was able to support me even the more. So I'm thankful for IFSS because they really educated the family. And I think if you don't talk about it, it doesn't help the consumer anymore as well, because a lot of times we want to be independent. We don't want to be coddled. We don't like the enabling that happens. But sometimes because they think because we have a mental illness, we doesn't have a voice. And a lot of times when you feel like you don't have a voice, it's very hard to express yourself and saying, listen, I don't need that. This is what I really need. And I think
right.
that's where the education really comes into play and the support that you really need for a mental health person.
You say you were 30 when your illness struck?
Yes.
And that must have been tough.
Yeah. Yeah, because I didn't understand what happened. I just resigned from a prominent, very major pharmaceutical company, and everything just went down like dominoes. When I resigned, I mean, everything fell apart in my life. My relationship with my kids, I ended up losing my kids to typhus. I ended up almost homeless and jobless, and I just, everything just crashed within a month. And I was going to go down south to go stay with my grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the day I had got sick, and I ended up in Carrier Clinic. And we didn't know what happened. We didn't know what, I don't even remember what happened. I lost a part of my memory at the time. And I remember I was in Carrier for maybe about 2 months. And it was the first time, it was around December, and it was right before Christmas time, and it was the first time I was away from my children because I was a single parent raising my children.
Right.
And it was the first time I was away from my children ever since they'd been born, and I was in carrier clinic. And because I had a relationship with the people at the credit union that was there, I would call them up on the 800 number and ask them to send money to my mom, you know, to help her out, because I wasn't sure if she was receiving any kind of financial support for my children. It was scary. I was there for till about February I came out, and I went back to moved in with my mom and my kids and everything, and just life started trying to build, not knowing. I didn't become a part of Easter Seals until like 2001, 2002, because okay. I had like a total, grand total of 5 hospitalizations from 98 to 2012. And that's where I really started picking up the pieces of my life. I had a caseworker that said, "Lorraine, why don't you try a job going back to work?" Well, all I knew was administration and business. And she had talked to me about getting into healthcare, like becoming a companion aide. Mm-hmm. And that was my first job outside of coming out of the hospital, was being a companion aide back in 2005. And I worked a couple hours a week, and I just started receiving Social Security. I was in a group home.
Right.
I just started building.
If I may ask, what were your diagnosis?
At the time, it was bipolar, schizophrenic, schizoaffective disorder. And I was hearing voices at the time. Mm-hmm. The funny thing about hearing voices, it was like sometimes you hear good voices, sometimes you hear bad voices. Right. It wasn't like everything was to the extreme of some people hearing voices, like, you know, harming yourself or harming others. It was just like negative thoughts and negative things, and I couldn't get out of the negativity mode. And I had quite a few medication changes, and finally they found the right one that I've been on, and I've been stable for a long time. I was stable for about 11 years, mm-hmm. hospital-free when I was with Easter Seals. And grateful for them. They really impacted my life. I'm thankful to have a praying mom and a praying grandmother. My faith had gotten stronger. I go to a church where, you know, I'm actually planted and I'm growing, mm-hmm. and, you know, developing, right. and I'm involved. And just so many things had transpired within those 11 years. And after the 11 years was up, I ended up getting sick again because I had switched psychiatrists. And he did a medication adjustment, and it did not work very well with me. So I ended up being hospitalized back in 2012. And I was so angry because you can be denied life insurance if you've been right. hospitalized within 10 years. So I was just about to sign another life insurance policy, you know, just to make right. sure I'm covered.
Right.
And I end up getting sick. So it's like, now I got to start all over again. So it was very yeah. devastating and, you know, quite frustrating to have gone through.
And I know my son takes quite a few medications, and a lot of times they'll want to give, and he can take generic on some of them, mm-hmm. but some he can't. They just absolutely don't work. But they always keep trying to put the generic in on those that don't work. And then you have to go down and argue with them, you know, that they don't work and there's proof and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, and it's very frustrating, you know. Like I said, my son is schizophrenic, and he used to say that the voices at the time were his brothers, his sister, mm. me, and his mom. Mm. And they were all, "You're no good, you know, why don't you end your life?" and that sort of thing, because, you know, you're not worth living and yada, yada. And now he's been on a medication for quite a while. It's worked. And, Clozaril is what he's on, is, you know, and that, you know, they had to go through hell and high water to get him on it. But because it's been in India for 25 years, Europe about 20, Canada 15, and has he been on it 3 years now? I think it's 3 years that they just, 3 years ago, they brought it into this country. And don't get me started on that, but his doctor used to go to India. His doctor was Indian at the time, and he has since moved way down South Jersey, so he can't go to him anymore. But when he used to go visit his family in India, he used to smuggle the drug back and give it to some of his patients who were having 15, 20 seizures a day. And if you look at the bottle from India and you look at today's, it's exactly the same from the United States and there. In India, it's about $5 for a 30-day supply. Canada's 15. It's $900 and change in this country. Okay? Now, you tell me how the average person got a car payment or a mortgage or rent, even doesn't even have to be a mortgage, it can be rent, couple children. How in heaven's name are they supposed to pay $900? And that, my son used to get 5 to about 7 seizures a week. When they put him in the hospital and drained him off his epileptic medications and put him on this new medication, he hasn't had a seizure in 3 years. Okay? And now, how does an average person pay $900+ a month for?
That's a rent. That's rent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stop and think. I mean, how much are these people making? I mean, come on, you know? Yeah. Even if they're making, you know, big bucks, it's still a lot of money. Right. Because you still have food, you still have other expenses, right. You know, and if you have children, you still have children to raise. So it's just, I don't know.
I know for me at one point, one of the psychiatrists had went through a pharmaceutical assistance program where they filled out a form for me and I was able to get the medication for free.
Right.
And they sent it to the mental health facility, and I would go there and pick it up because I think at the time the dosage that I was on, I think for 30 days for the lowest dose was over $400.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, you just shake your head, you know. How can that same medication, the exact same ingredients in India, you know, and in Middle Europe and Canada be anywhere from $5 to $25 to $15, and here it's $900. So tell me who's making all that money. Okay? Don't let me go there. could either Jill or Martha, I don't care which, speak about the residential program? Flip a coin? Or
sure. We have residential programs in different counties throughout the state. Programs that we have here in Hunterdon County, we have A+, A, and B group homes. Those residential facilities, based on the level of need for the individuals, is based on how many hours that staff are scheduled to be in the house. We have 24-hour, and it can go all the way down to a couple hours a week for individuals. We look to transition people out of our residential programs. So while they're in the residential programs, what we're looking to do is we're looking to work with individuals on any, again, linkages that they need in the community, activities of daily living, whether it's, you know, how to cook dinner, how to clean, those types of things, so that people are able to transition.
I send my son back to learn how to cook dinner. We didn't have a microwave. He'd starve to death.
Because then that way, when people are ready to transition out of our residential programs, they're able to be in their own apartment and independent, and they're able to maintain.
Right. How long on an average, I know it varies, obviously, but how, on an average, if you had a, how long would somebody stay in a 24-hour program or a housing program?
I mean, It's hard to say because it's based on each individual. You know, we have some individuals who have been in our residential group homes for quite some time because they need that continued level of care.
Right.
You know, when an individual is ready, the transition is to move them through the programs.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's individually based. So it could be a couple of years. One of the hardest things to transition is just making sure that there's, you know, potential housing assistance available. For a lot of our counties, you know, waiting lists are closed for Section 8 and those types of things. So we want to make sure that an individual goes into a situation where they're going to have what they need to be financially stable as well. So sometimes it can take longer based on those external factors.
And what do they do then? They go from like the 24 hours, they moved into the 12 hours?
They can move down to 12, and they could step down from there. And then when they're ready, transition into independent living, potentially work with our supported housing program so that they have assistance with their rent, and they also have a case manager that's coming out and assisting them as needed.
You want to elaborate a little bit about your supportive housing?
Our supported housing program.
You can read the paper. It's okay. She's cheating, folks, but that's
I'm
okay.
I don't supervise that program.
No, that's all right.
For our supported housing program, we have programs that those individuals that come into the program, they get it like a rental assistance.
Mm-hmm.
So what would happen is they would come out, they would have that rental assistance, so they were able to be financially stable. And then they would have the case manager coming out providing case management services.
And how long would that last on an average? Is there a time limit? I mean, like...
There's no time limit for that.
Is it 18 months and a caseworker stops coming? Or is it, you know, how long is that?
No, there's not a time limit. So it's based on need. If the individual needs to continue to have those services, mm-hmm. those services will be provided.
Okay. Now, here comes the big question. Is there a cost to these things? For the individual?
There is a cost to the individual, and it's based on a percentage.
That's like the percentage of their income for the rent,
yes.
for the housing?
Is That's
what
correct.
You're saying? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Then that hasn't changed since my son was in it. You know?
No.
No. <It's>, you know. But, all right, now, when they go to, what is it, the... what did you call it? A plus A, B? What mm-hmm. is, okay. B is the lowest?
Yes.
Okay. And there, a caseworker or somebody comes, what, a couple hours a week or could be,
yes.
or if they need more,
mm-hmm.
more? Okay. And then you try to get that at the individual to progress to their own living,
yes.
right? Because I know when my son moved out of B, NAMI at the time had two houses, and Easter Seals was the case manager for the
yes.
houses. And one was right here in Clinton, and it was a vacancy, and he filed for it on his own, and he got accepted.
Mm-hmm.
And he had lived there for quite a while. In fact, ironically, the fellow that was sharing his apartment with him. They both moved to the same apartment complex, you
mm-hmm.
know. But, you know, it's, I think it's an excellent program that you guys run. I really do. And I think you do too, Lorraine, right?
Yes, I do.
When you went on the road to recovery, did you ever think about becoming a peer support person, or is it just something that happened to you?
Yes and no. What happened was my very last case manager, right before she was transitioning to another position, and she was closing my case with Easter Seals, and she said, Lorraine, you know, I think you would make a good peer. And I said, appear for what, you know, and
where do I have to appear, right?
Yes. And so, you know, she said, I'm going to remember you when I move on. So let me know how you do. And I said, okay. So I get this call, like, maybe a couple of months later. And she said, Lorraine, I got a position open in Hunterdon County. And I was like, okay. So I went for the interview, and I was, you know, was told all about it. And I said, well, do I have to deal with hoarders? And, you know, I'm asking all sorts of weird questions. And she's looking at me like, just relax, Lorraine, just relax. So I was hired on the spot. And for me, it's given me an opportunity to kind of walk the talk. I'm a Christian, and I love God, and I'm so thankful that I know that it was Him that really has helped me to feel successful for the mm-hmm. first time in my life. Because before, I would get so close to my goal, and I would quit and give up. But because of a lot of the baby steps and you know, the hand-holding and the pushing, you know, the less enablers and things, I feel like I'm successful for the first time in my life because I'm helping other consumers that deal with the parents that are enablers, that deal with people that don't believe in them. I had a psychiatrist tell me at one point I'd never be able to drive. I'll never have my kids back. I'll have to depend on somebody for the rest of my life. I'll never do so much. A psychiatrist told me that. And I'm so thankful for that one person that believed in me. And they said, Lorraine, you can do this. You can do it. And I didn't believe what he said. He's, from what I understand, deceased. I didn't kill him, but but he's deceased, and I've moved on, and I've gotten my kids, I've gotten custody of my children again. I'm living out on my own. I've bought several cars, you know. I've moved on, you know. My faith has gotten stronger. Just so many opportunities have opened up because I became a peer. And I'm just taking them step by step, each day at a time.
Yeah, I have. We've never met face to face, but I've talked to this doctor from Long Island, and she's been on the show a couple times, and you know she's written books and stuff. And she was hospitalized, suffers from severe depression, and 2-3 times was hospitalized and stuff. And I said to her, you know, your patients should be thrilled because you're not only talk the talk, but you've walked the walk. You've been in a hospital. You know what depression's like. And it's the same thing with you, Lorraine. You've walked the walk. I mean, you've been through hell and back.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, so when you're talking to a person who has a mental health issue, forgive me, I don't like the word consumer. But I think we ought to change it for something else. It's a person, you know, who has a mental health problem. And you're talking to them. I think it's wonderful because you've been there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it reminds me of a woman who called me one time and said that her son just came back from Iraq and Afghanistan and wouldn't come out of his room, wouldn't talk to her, wouldn't, you know, she was all upset and everything, and I tried beating on the door and everything. I says, well, why don't you see if he'll talk to me? And she says, well, why would he talk to you and not me? I says, because I'm a vet. She says, were you in Afghanistan? I says, no, Vietnam. But it's what's the difference? If you're walking in a swamp or you're walking on a desert, there's bombs blowing up all around you anyway, so what's the difference? He talked to me for almost 2 hours on the phone. I got him to go to Lyons Hospital, and he, as far as I know, he's still going there and, you know, getting treatment and stuff. But it's the same thing,
yeah.
You know. It's a vet talking to a vet. You know, it's like you're a person with a mental health problem in the past, and you can talk to a person who has a similar problem or even a different problem. It doesn't have to be the same kind.
Yeah.
It can be severe depression. It's still a mental health issue. And you can talk to them from experience. And I think that's the awesome part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not that you girls, you know, Martha and Jill, don't do great. But the point is that you are great. And I really, truly mean that. But when you have someone like Lorraine to help fill in with you, it's awesome because that way the person that you're helping or trying to help, they have someone that they can go to who has walked the walk and talked the talk, so to speak, you know. So I think it's wonderful.
Thank you.
And when you are a peer, do you get to, I don't want to say choose the person you work with, but did they assign? I saw that, you know. But she mouthed something. I won't say what, but she mouthed something. But did you get assigned a person to work with, or do they choose? Or how does that work?
We have a caseload of people that we work with, and depending on the severity of their illness, there are times where I am asked not to work with them because of their severity. But for the ones that I do have, I think where the misconception come in is that people think because you have a mental illness, you're no longer human.
Yeah.
And you are.
Oh, yeah.
And when it comes to that, because I treat them like they're human and I make them feel like they feel special, meaning I challenge them to do what they said that no one could tell them they could do. And I try to help guide them in that sense. I've had a young lady that I worked with where her family did not believe she could work, she could do this, she could do that. Right now, she's working. She got her car back. She's saving money. And they got mad at me for doing this, but it was one of those things of saying, why did you tell her she couldn't? Like,
right.
What makes her different that she couldn't do these things? And I helped her get it done within like a year.
Mm-hmm.
And now we just recently downsized and I'm no longer working with her. But the reason, you know, is that I treat them like they're human.
Exactly.
And I make them feel and acknowledge you are human. You're still an aunt. You're still a sister, a brother, an uncle. You still have value.
You know, it just bothers me to no end. And that's what NAMI's all about, trying to break the stigma that's attached to mental illness. You know, if my son had cancer, everybody go, oh, Larry, I'm sorry, you know, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mental illness, everybody takes two steps back and, you know, I don't know if you've ever heard Mrs. Cody, the former governor's wife, speak.
She's amazing, yeah.
But you were at the,
yeah.
We were next to each other. Yeah. That's right. You did hear her speak. Hopefully she's going to come on. We've got a date in October set for her to come on the radio. But like she said, when she had cancer issues, I think it was cancer issues, everybody all brought food over and everybody was calling and everybody wanted to help. We found out she had postpartum depression. Nobody rang the bell, you know, and nobody did nothing, you know. And it's like, my, really? You know. And that's the way it is. And it's just, to me, it just drives me insane, you know. Because you don't have to raise your hand. You can just speak. You're not in class, Lorraine.
You know, I wanted to add something that I think also that happens even in people's churches and faith, that they feel that because they're on medication for mental illness, that there's something wrong with them or God didn't heal them or whatever the case may be. And I remember sharing my testimony in church, and I said, well, if I was a diabetic, would you tell me stop taking my insulin? If I was a cancer patient, will you tell me not to take chemo? Then why is it when people have mental health issues and they're on medication, you tell them to get off and just get over it? And they just can't get over it. I have an actual imbalance of fluid in my brain,
right,
which is why I'm on the medication. So if I'm getting the assistance that I need, what makes it so different from the other people that needs assistance with medication?
And it's like, you know, nobody asked for diabetic. Nobody asked to be a diabetic. Nobody asked to be a cancer patient. Nobody asked to have a mental illness. You know, Mental illness is a chemical imbalance of the brain, and that's what it is. And, you know, it's like, why is it so different than cancer? You know? And it's just amazing to me that there's more people in jail across the country with mental illness than there are in mental health hospitals. And it just boggles my mind. It really does. You know, and that's what we're all fighting for, you know, you guys and NAMI is what we're trying to, you know, break the stigma that's attached to it so that people won't feel embarrassed to get help. Because a lot of times they feel, well, if I get help, then they'll know I have mental illness, and then they won't, you know, nobody will talk to me or help me or whatever. And it shouldn't be that way. I mean, it's an illness. Nobody asked for it. You know, it's like my mother didn't ask to have Alzheimer's. You know, it happened. Mm-hmm. You know, she didn't say, oh, I want it. You know, you know, and it didn't happen. You know, it just happened to her, you know, and to hundreds of thousands of other people. And we don't treat them any different than we do people with mental, we do treat them different than people with mental illness. And that's what bothers me, you know. But I give you a lot of credit, Lorraine. I really do. And I'm not just saying that. I don't throw out compliments too easily.
Thank you.
No, because, you know, first of all, it came later in life.
Yeah.
Okay? My son was 19, okay, or almost 20, depending who you ask. If you ask my wife, it was 20. If you ask me, it was almost 20. But, you know, how that goes. You'll find out. You just got married. I was pointing at Martha when I said that. She's going on her honeymoon at the end of the week, so, you know.
Yes.
Enjoy.
Thank you.
All right. But, you know, it's like, so you're, in your case, you were, like, had a life set up already when it happened to you.
Oh, yes.
You know, and it averages like from 18 to 26, 25, 26, somewhere in around there. Sometimes earlier. Sometimes it happens as young as 5 years old. I was talking to a couple doctors who were not in the same group, and they both said they had a five-year-old who attempted suicide.
Oh,
and they didn't realize, he says, the one doctor says he didn't think that the child knew what they were doing, but they were just hurting and they wanted to stop. The other one told me he was three, and he,
wow,
the three-year-old did something. And you know, so I give you all a lot of credit. I really do. And, you know, and I will say this, if NAMI can help you in any way, you know, don't hesitate to reach out, you know, because we are like you locally here in Hunterdon mm-hmm. County. So if we can help you with anything, you know, please don't hesitate. We got about 5 minutes more to go. I wanted to ask one other thing. Lorraine, is there any advice you would like to give to people facing mental health issues?
I would love to tell them what I always tell them. God doesn't give you more than what you can handle. He handles what you're given. It's one of those things of don't give up on your dreams and your aspirations, whatever you want to do. Just because you have what appears to be a disability is not debilitating to you. It's something that's going to benefit you if you use it in the right way. I think also to educate yourself and educate your family about your illness and see if you can work together collaboratively to make a difference, not just in your family's life, but in the lives of others. And get educated about the resources out there. There's so many other mental health organizations like Alternatives and Bridgeway and the ARC mm-hmm. and Catholic Charities and Easter Seals and, you know, so many places out there for your loved ones who may not know that they're out there, to get you educated about them and begin to talk about it. Talk with each other, not just at each other, and just grow from there.
Very good. You know, what you were talking about, remember at the meeting that we were at, the fellow that was sitting next to me?
Yes.
He's one of my best friends. He has mental illness and has had it for quite a while. And he could tell you some stories about what he did or didn't do and yada, yada. He's a CFO of a large company. Mm-hmm. That's chief financial officer. And, you know, he can, he's gone on with his life. There's a teacher, a music teacher here in Hunterdon County, who was on a radio show, who has PTSD and traumatic brain injury from a minor car accident. And she can't remember the first 20 years of her life. But she's a teacher. And she was just teacher of the year in her school. So you can go on and do things, you know. Some people do a lot, and some people don't want to go back and do what they were doing. They want to do something else, which is fine too, you know. So if someone wanted to reach out to Easter Seals, either one of you young ladies, who would they do and how would they do it?
So our office is on Route 31, and that's the Flemington office for Easter Seals. They can call us directly at 908-788-7580 and talk to Kathy. She's our admin, and we can put in a referral. And we currently have a great deal of availability. We have about 25 open spots at this time. Yeah.
Wow, that's cool. Yeah. It's cool in one way and bad in another, I guess, if you want to look at it that way.
So, and like I said, initially, you just have to be 18 years old and have a mental health diagnosis and be willing to work on some goals.
And what was that phone number again?
908-788-7580.
Now, could they look you up on the internet?
They sure can.
Do you know what the website is?
It's Easter Seals, New Jersey, right? So www.easterseals.com/NJ.
Easterseals.com/NJ.
/NJ.
/NJ. Yes. Okay. Say it again because I'm confused now.
So www.easterseals.com/NJ.
Okay. Yeah. And they can look up?
You can look up all of our programs there.
All programs there and everything,
we have,
right?
Several different programs throughout the state and different counties. So you'll be able to look up programs based on where you reside and your needs for the disability that you have.
Well, I can't tell you how thrilled I was to have you all here today. It's been a pleasure, and I'm not just saying that. And I will have you back.
Okay.
And if we have the video thing, we'll turn it off for you, Jill.
Yeah. Video,
everybody else would want to be on it, but, you know, you don't want to be on it. That's okay. We'll turn it off for you.
Yeah. I have a radio voice, though. Yeah. There you go.
My wife says I got a radio face.
Yeah, well, so. I was going to say that, but, you know.
But I wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Enjoy your honeymoon,
Martha.
You know, and I really mean it. I hope you all come back because, you know.
Yes, definitely.
I think that what you're doing is awesome, and you're helping people and living example of is Lorraine. And, you know, it's just, I think that it's just a wonderful organization. And I can speak from experience because my son went through it, so I do know it's a wonderful organization.
And if anyone who's listening wants to become employed with Easter Seals, they can visit that website. You can apply right online, and you can help join the mission because I'll be with Easter Seals. It'll be 15 years in November, and being a part of stories like the Rains is the reason I'm still here.
Yeah. That's why I do what NAMI does, you know, for the same reason. So until next week, folks, have a good week and stay healthy. And remember, mental health really does matter. See you next week.
USA Radio News with Jason Wirt.
We could have handled it better in terms of providing more information more quickly. In those 90 minutes, we were putting a priority on making sure she was okay. I should say that as soon as she got into the vehicle, she was alert the whole time.
That's Clinton campaign spokesman Brian Fallon admitting they could have done a better job informing the press about the candidate's health issues. Fallon and the Clinton campaign playing defense after they taunted reporters who were questioning Hillary's health before she collapsed after a 9/11 event. A ceasefire taking effect in Syria. The truce negotiated by the U.S. and Russia took effect at sundown. The Syrian army said it accepted the agreement and announced a seven-day regime of calm to be instituted across the nation. Former British Prime Minister David Cameron stepping down from Parliament.
And I've decided the right thing to do is to stand down as the Member of Parliament for Witney.
He said he didn't want to be a potential distraction from the new Prime Minister. USA Radio News.
Hello, I'm Eric, a student at Hillsdale College. Here is Hillsdale.